This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
He left a small town in Brazil to chase jiu-jitsu in the United States. And now he's competing against some of the best grapplers in the world. Today we're talking with Six Blades black belt Felipe Costa about the grind of becoming a professional and building a style that's uniquely his.
Ooh, Winston, he did it really good. He got up to 80 calories and he did a 1700, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are on the assault bike.
Yeah, it's a little higher.
Yeah, I only know Echo, but like. I don't think we've ever seen any. I mean, I think the best Victor ever got was in the 17s.
Yeah, man. But in the Echo, you go way higher, like way higher. But man, Winston, he laid down on the mat and he stays there for like 45 minutes after. And he was like, man, like I cannot move. My legs are done. I feel that my blood pressure is low right now, you know. And I was like, oosh.
You're like, welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
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 Yeah, did you tell him that you did three whole rounds of that?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, man.
We did 24.
No,
it was 20. Well, it would have been eight times three, 24. Sorry, 24. 24. Yeah, 24. 24 rounds.
Oof, man, that was tough. That day was tough.
Yeah.
But no, he was dying, man. He was dying. Noah also died a little bit. Raphael, everyone was feeling.
Unless you've done it before, there's no way. Yeah. I mean, that first exposure, like the first time you guys did it, you were like,
oosh. Yeah.
And then you kind of. Well, also, it's a lactate. So your body's not used to really processing that level of lactate. I think when we did the testing, it was like 18 to 20 millimoles, which is too much.
Yeah.
Unless you've done this lactate bathing deal where your body is used to it. Mm-hmm. That's why I used to chase you guys around and ask you where you were from and how to spell and all that. Cause I was trying to make sure that you guys were coherent and lucid because that first time you guys just like shut down.
Exactly.
And I was like, we got to do something better.
Yeah. I think that's how Winston felt today. He was a little confused about everything. That's funny.
Well, also, if you, what's the right word? If you're partying a little bit, because I know those guys go out and drink and probably party a little bit.
You're gonna feel it for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like any form of like toxicity in your body, whether it be, I don't know, a cigarette or booze or anything, like all of that just seems to magnify the effect. Mm-hmm. I was laughing though as I drove by. Yesterday was Cassie's birthday, so we went to have sushi. And as we were driving home, my buddy Matt is in town. He saw his van, so I dropped him off at the van, and he had left it at Six Blades Bee Cave. And I drove by, and Sarai and Winston were finishing up. They were rolling, and I was like, I looked, and I was like, man, Sarai is bigger than Winston.
Than Winston, yeah, for sure, man. But
and he's a big dude.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He's strong.
Yeah,
he's strong. But that's, I think, his only thing right now is the cardio. You know, if he can get his cardio better, he can do good.
Yeah, that one day I watched him roll with Shanji. He beat on Shanji for about the first like 4 or 5 or 6 minutes, and Shanji just weathered the storm. And then as soon as he gassed, all of a sudden, fucking,
yeah,
you know, started working. Yeah, got on, passed his guard, fucking started choking him just to the point he was going to tap and then stopped. Mm-hmm. And then got him in like three different chokes, like choked him right to the point of like almost tapping and then stopped.
And then stopped.
And then just kept, and then like basically like didn't submit him, just beat him up the whole round. I was like, so petty.
Sucks. Yeah, really petty.
Arash was killing me yesterday. He said he brought up the petty thing, and Shanji's like, "What do you mean with this petty?" And he's like, "He's like, it's like when I bring everybody coffee and I don't bring you one, and you're like, oh, you don't bring me coffee, and then you're mad at me for a bunch of days for not bringing you a coffee." He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "That's petty." He's like, "Oh."
We were talking on the mats about that, and Shanji and Victor was also like, what does petty mean, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, guys.
And Arash had the perfect explanation.
And
I'm like, god damn. I'm like, Arash's timing's getting good.
It's getting good. Yeah. It's getting good.
Yeah, he was hobbling around. His knees hurt now.
Yeah, he was. I saw that this morning he posted like, oh, now I'm just going to do bike, you know. I'm not going to run anymore. Walking is hard because of my knee. And I was like, come on, Arash. You were training yesterday.
Well, he said it locked up on him. He had me bring him my crutches.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I brought him my crutches, which I was more than happy to get rid of. I fucking hate those things.
Yeah,
it's like a shitty reminder. So I dropped him off. I'm happy to like give him away.
Give them away. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that he's knee locked up.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not seeing him message.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a torn meniscus.
Yeah.
So they just have to figure out what the tear is. If it's a fray on the outside and flapping in the joint, they can go clean it up. But if it's what's called a bucket tear where it's in the middle,
yeah,
then they got to put a stitch in and he'll be non-weight bearing for a little bit. So I mean, that'll pull him off the mat, which will mean I'll have just enough time
to come back and beat him up. I mean, that's a good plan.
Plan. Yeah. All right, so I was going to do a little bit of intro. Today's guest is Mr. Felipe Costa, black belt under Shanji Ribeiro and one of the rising stars in an international Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. Originally from San Luis in
Maranhão,
Brazil. Felipe started training at 10 years old in San Luis under Ivaldo Alves. Yeah. Before making the move to the United States to pursue jits professionally with Six Blades in the team. Since then, you've built an impressive competition resume, including IBJJF titles, ADCC trials, and you won the bronze in ADCC 2 years ago, professional events, and you're known as a technical pressure heavy style with an athletic game. I want to talk to you a little bit about your journey from Brazil to the United States, but really what it takes to be a professional athlete and some a little bit of goal setting and what's on the horizon for you in 2026 with the ADCC coming up in Poland and then also the Who's Number One you have on March 30th. Mm-hmm. So let's jump right in. All right. So you studied physiotherapy while training and competing at a high level, right? So that's what you originally started in school and your mom wanted you to do this, wanted you to get an education. So when that kind of piece, you're going to school in Brazil and you're training and you know you have this dream of being a professional athlete, how did you balance that at the time? Because I don't know if it's as necessarily as front focus as it is here in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
This episode of Power at the Radio is brought to you by the Business of Strength, the team behind Varsity House Gym. If you're a gym owner or a coach ready to build a career in fitness, check out their Strongest Year Project Mastermind. It's a 12-month roadmap with coaching, systems, and support from a team that's built multi-7-figure gyms. They're hosting Trainer School on January 23rd at Varsity House HQ in New Jersey. It's a one-day hands-on workshop to level up your coaching skills fast. Get a free strategy call and $1,000 off the Mastermind at businessofstrength.com/attend. Build a better business. Build your strongest year. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses, used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show.
Oof, to be honest, back then, whenever I think about doing all of that, I think I was just living day by day. You know, I didn't have big expectations with jiu-jitsu. I was never like, for sure, I wanted to come to the US. I wanted to be a professional athlete. but it's not like the jiu-jitsu was paying millions for you to be a professional athlete, you know? So I always knew that I had to develop something else besides jiu-jitsu. And back then I didn't want to do it because I was like, man, I just want to train right now, you know? I just want to go to the school. I want to move to another state, you know? A big state in Brazil is São Paulo. You've been to São Paulo, right? Yeah, São Paulo, they have really good jiu-jitsu, you know? And I got some invites to move to São Paulo and train there.
I didn't like São Paulo. It was super dirty.
Yeah, it's a really big city, you know? Yeah. Like, I would say that it's kind of like New York vibes, you know? Yeah. Like, people don't really care about what you're doing. They just like, oh, I need to get to the metro. I need to go to my work. I need to go back home. So everyone's just like really busy in São Paulo. And it is dirty. I remember that the first time that everyone talks about that, but the first time that you've been to São Paulo, you go through a little river. It's not even a river. It's a little, let's call it a river, but the smell is really strong. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that, but man, it's right outside of the airport. You drive through and the smell is really strong, you know? And then I went to São Paulo a couple of times to fight and to train, and was really good because I got to meet a lot of people, you know, got to meet Leandro Lo, that he passed away, I think, 4 years ago, but yeah. He was also a big deal in jiu-jitsu, you know.
So he was in São Paulo?
He was in São Paulo.
And where did he train at?
He was originally training with Cicero Costa. He kind of like have a social project in São Paulo where all the kids would go there, they sleep on the mats, you know, and train the whole day. And at the end of the day, he ended up getting out of Cicero Costa and opened his own thing that was called Brotherhood in the time. And then I went there probably back in 2017, 2018. And I got to train a little bit with him. That was really cool. But I always, deep inside, I knew that I didn't want to move to São Paulo, you know. I wanted to either stay in São Luís, get my degree, or move here to the U.S., you know. I didn't really see big opportunities coming from São Paulo because I'm always trying to look for someone that I know that went through that way and is going to help me through it, you know. So in São Paulo, imagine there is like 20 kids training under you, for example. Man, for you to give enough attention for the 20 kids, it's really hard, you know? And probably most of them, it's going to get stuck on the way and going to try to do something else. So I was always like, no, I want to find someone that I can get attention from them and they can help me pursue my dream, you know? And I knew that São Paulo was not the place because it was overpopulated.
Sure.
So I stayed in São Luis and then I started doing physical therapy. My mom was always like, no, go study. I don't know if this jiu-jitsu thing is going to work, you know. And then I started doing physical therapy when I was 17 years old. And man, back then I was just like, oh, that's my opportunity, you know, to train and to just study. And then I remember that I was waking up like 6, going to the jiu-jitsu school, doing my training, and then my class would start at 1 p.m. So I would train until like 11, go home, eat something, go to the class, make sure that I pay a lot of attention to the class so I would not have to study at home. So I was kind of like one of the kids that I would have good friends in college, but I was always like, the moment of the class, I was always 100% focusing on the class because I didn't want to spend time studying at home. I wanted to train. So I would stay in the class until like 6, 5:30, and then I would go to get the evening class that would start at 7 and would stay on the mats until like 10 p.m., you know? And I did that like, man, every single day.
Is San Luis a small town?
Yeah, it's a pretty small town.
Like how many people?
1 million.
Oh, okay. Million. So probably about a third the size of, I think, Austin. When I first moved here in 2017, there was about 1 million people. I think it's about 3.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's like pretty good size.
Yeah, it's a pretty good size. But the thing is, like, there is a lot of people in San Luis, but I think the space, it's not that big, you know? So you know everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's an island. So like, if I don't know you, I probably know one of your cousins, your brother, one. I know someone from your family, you know? And that's, I think, what it turns San Luis into a small city, you know? So the drive, for example, from my home to college was like 10 minutes, and college to the school was more like 10 minutes, you know? So it was really fast to get to both of them. And then, yeah, I did that for a long time. And then I remember that whenever I was like in the second semester of the college or third, my mom started like, oh, like, Felipe, don't you want to get a job or something like that? I was not making a lot of money with jiu-jitsu, you know? I was teaching a good amount of classes. I would teach the beginner's class, some of the kids' class. I started to teach whenever I was 16 years old. And then whenever my mom was like, oh, Felipe, maybe it's time for you to get a job in the physical therapy or something like that. And my professors, they loved me. But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to fight as most tournaments as I can, because in Brazil, they would pay for the open class, you know? So then I would just travel around a lot. Like I would travel on Friday night and go back Sunday morning because I wanted to win the open class and bring back the money, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember that I would go, I would invest like, let's say $100 on the tickets. I would fight, I would win $500. I would get home and I would be like, look, mom, I don't need to work. Here is the money, you know? And I would give everything to her.
Yeah.
And then I did that for a long time until like later on, when I was 20 years old, I met Victor when I was 16. We stayed traveling around for a while. And then I seen him again when I was 20. He was going to fight. Was his first tournament as a black belt. He actually fought Eric Muniz. Was his first tournament? Was something like that at BJJ Stars. And he had a good fight with Eric Muniz. It didn't go his way. But after that, he sent me a message. He was like, hey, let's train together. Come here to Florianópolis. That was where my sponsor lived. And then I went there.
In Florianópolis? Down south?
Yes, down south. And our sponsor was like, Flip, just come train with Victor, you know? And Lovato was also fighting the BJJ Stars. So I also met Lovato at the time. And man, I remember that my style was always like a lot of competition, like related, you know? Like my professor, he was really big in the competition. And was always make sure that I was tracking the points, that I was tracking everything that I was doing, make sure that I play a lot of strategy with my game, you know? And the first time that I went to train with Lovato and Victor was like, our sponsor, he has a big house and he has mats at his house. And then Victor was like, oh, Lovato's coming tomorrow, you know? And man, I don't know, was during COVID, I think I got a little sick before the train and like, was a long week. And then Lovato and Victor were like, oh, okay, Felipe, we're going to do a round robin. Everyone stays on the middle for 3 minutes. You know, I was a brown belt at the time. Man, I remember that the first probably 6-9 minutes, I did okay. And after that, I didn't have any gas anymore. Man, they both smashed me pretty bad. You know, pretty bad. And I remember that I was like, Victor, I can't, man. I'm going to throw up. Like, I can't. And then Victor was like, go to the restroom. And I was like, no, I also don't want to look bad in front of Lovato, you know? So I was kind of like, what do I do? And man, I remember that I had a fever for like 2 days after this training. That was the first time that I met Lovato. And then after that training, Victor was like, Flip, I think you should come to the US, you know? In the beginning, I was like, yes, okay. I had a couple invites already. I had a good friend that is Gracie Barra here, and he wanted to bring me to the US already. And I was talking to him. He offered me a salary. Everything was going good. I was like, oh, Victor, I think I'm going to go with him. And he was like, no, just come with me. We're going to open 6 blades. It's going to be good. And then I was like, oh, nice. Do you guys have any opportunity there for me, anything? And I was like, you can live with me. we're not going to be able to pay you because the school is not open, you know, so you're not going to have a salary, but I'm going to find ways that, like, we can find ways to pay for the registration at the tournament, you know, we can register you to fight tournaments, the FJJF, we can figure out every tournament that I fight, you can fight. And I was like, okay, let's do it then. And then I decided to come with Victor and all with the guy at Grace Barra, just because I also have a vision. I was like, man, if I go to Grace Barra, I'll probably be a professor. You know, I'm going to start teaching a lot. I'm going to make money. I'm going to have a salary. But what I really want to is take the time to compete, you know. And Victor, he's offering me like guidance, home and food and the registration. That's all I need, you know. Later on, I'm going to be able to figure out. And I came with Victor, and that's how I met everyone from Six Blades. So, little long story.
No, it's great. It's great. No, it's good background. I mean, I've heard that story in pieces. Yeah, but I've never heard the entirety.
The full thing.
Yeah, no, but what was your first experience or impression of a bottle?
Ooh, man. I was really impressive because, how I said, I did a good in the first 3-6 minutes, but man, whenever he starts smashing me, he was just like relentless, you know? He was, man, I'm gonna kill you, you know? And I never felt that before because it was always like a competition mindset.
Sure.
You know, whenever someone is on top of you and you cannot move, and you kind of like, what do I do from here? And I was a brown belt already, you know? And he was mounting on me and I couldn't escape. I was trying really hard and he was staying on mount and I was like, God, where am I gonna go? And I'm like, man, I'm just vulnerable right now, you know? I don't know what to do. I don't have a guess. If he wants, like, I'm done here, you know? And I remember that he was just pushing me. He was like, no, you gotta escape. I'm not gonna get out of here. And I was like, oh God. And I was trying to escape really hard. So the first impression was really strong, but was also nice because I connected with him a lot in the first day, you know? And then I remember that from there, he was also like, Felipe, come to Oklahoma, let's train in Oklahoma, you know? And then the second time that I came to Oklahoma, I felt so much better, you know? So, and then the training started getting better. And I also started to pick up more of the style of the school, you know? My style was not a lot of pressure. How I said, was more a lot of strategy, you know? It was kind of like, oh, I want to score 2 points, make sure that I don't got a score, see how I can find the gap and go for the gap, you know? And today I see jiu-jitsu more as a fight. And that's what I took from Lovato, from Shanjan, from Victor. It's like, man, if I find the gap, I'm going to kill this guy. You know, there's not other way. I don't want to play to score 2 points. I want to play to kill him, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was funny because I've been fighting a lot of submission only. And this last Austin Open, I was just like thinking about the submission, you know? In my mind, I'm like, man, I have 10 minutes. I want to submit everybody, you know? And I got four submissions. But in my final, the guy pulled guard and he was really annoying with the grips, you know? And then he ended up sweeping me. And then I swept him back, past his guard, mount, and I got the choke, right? But then I went to talk with Victor and Victor was like, Felipe, you need to be more, you need to use the strategy. You know, if the guy was good, he could have swept you and hold you there for like 8 minutes, you know? And then I was like, yeah, that's true. Like my mindset right now is a lot of submission. You know, I just want to, I have 10 minutes. I'm not thinking about scoring 2 points. I'm thinking about how am I going to get the job done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that was what changed a lot. And that was my impression of Lovato because Lovato, he's a lot like that. For sure, he knows how to play with the strategy. He knows what's his game, but he's also always looking for the submission, always looking for the gap. And I think we all are like that, like myself, Shanji, Lovato, Victor. If we find the gap, we're going to go for the sub, you know?
Mm-hmm. Where I feel like a lot of the people in the jiu-jitsu game now are, you know, mm-hmm. score a little point and then just play runaway.
Exactly.
Like I had to laugh when, you know, Victor ended up winning that, the Grand Prix, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and he took out Pedro Mourinho. So, and then he was kind of like, oh, what happened? You know, obviously turned his back to Victor, which was a terrible fucking idea.
For sure.
But then I was reading through the comments and people were like, you know, dishonorable and this, and Pedro was more, I mean, I'm like, dude, I watched Pedro go against Lovato he got a single leg and an advantage and then stalled the bottle for 12 fucking minutes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like, off an advantage wins and he's, you know, beating his chest like he just won the heavyweight fucking championship. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, mm-hmm. come on, dude. Like, this guy's a, you know, he's a fucking game player too. And like, that was his fuck up. He shouldn't, I'm not turning my back on Victor.
For sure. For sure. I think that's like, man, if that's a little bit of, I would say it can be a little bit of karma, you know?
Yeah.
Like he probably like, I think he was a little bit too confident and Victor was more like, I need to find a gap, you know? And whenever Victor saw any kind of like, oh, he turned the back. It was not even like, oh, he did that on purpose. It was not, you know, was his just, his eyes were so focused on that.
I was so proud. That he was so proud that he just laid him out. Like, it was like perfect. It was like the spear takedown.
Man,
he
just lit him up. I sent you the message right away. Yeah. I was like, coach, good job on training Victor this one.
Well, what I like, and, you know, hopefully, you know, this comes from football, is you have to have that, you know, and this is, like there was, from the UFC BJJ deal, they were kind of interviewing people and they had like Nicky Rod and some of the people about, you know, like what is jiu-jitsu? And I think one of the guys was like, oh, it's like a fight where nobody gets hurt. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, not really like that. I mean, you know, you're not open hand fisting people, but I mean, dude, like you are, you know, imposing your will upon somebody 100%. And like beating them up without physically punching them in the face.
100%.
You know, I mean, whether you use your head or your shoulder, or your body, the submissions, I mean, like the, I think people forget that it's still a fight and then there's some level of violence.
Exactly.
And like, it's, I don't know, maybe people think that it's patty cake because nobody, because there's no blood, but like it's.
Exactly.
It's legit.
And if you also see today, the guys that are doing good is the guys that bring back this violent part of jiu-jitsu, you know, the guys that are playing the game, they are starting to get behind, you know, because all the organizations today, they want to play submission only, you know. So if you're playing safe the whole time, you're not scoring any points. And who is violent, it's always like being aggressive and getting closer and scoring points, you know.
Well, I know they need to have a winner and loser because that's what people want. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, in the fight where, you know, Victor lost the decision to Luke Griffin, you know, Victor beats him up for like 8 minutes, you know, does everything he could to try to choke him, completely dominates it. The guy gets on top and then the roles are reversed and he just happened to, you know, at the expiration of 15 minutes, he ends up being on top for 7 minutes and they end up giving him the win. And then the dude's beating his chest. And I'm like, one, you didn't fucking submit him. You didn't even score a point. You know, like if you have to have, if it has to go to the decision, like it's a little different in boxing.
Yeah.
Where like you can, you know, do punch counts and you can see like who's bloodied and battered and who took big shots and this. But like in the jiu-jitsu game, like, you know, it, you know, you guys picked whoever just happened to be on top at the very end. I thought it was bullshit. I thought for those major title defenses and for those big ones, you need to have a clear winner, which means that you have to have a submission and you just do a draw.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, man, that is a lot rule set in jiu-jitsu, you know. And the submission only one, it can be a little tricky too, because for example, that is ABI rules, that the rule is if there is not a submission, they start either on the back, over time is either on the back or on the armbar position, you know?
Sure.
And then who gets a submission or who controls for longer wins the match. You know what I mean? But then there is also a not as good part of it, because then people, what they do, they train a lot just back attacks and armbar attacks, you know, and then they go to the regular time, they get a smash, people pass the guard, do everything, but they just make sure that they don't get submitted. So they go to the overtime and then they can win the overtime, you know. So I think that that's the thing about the rule set. That is always like it's going to be a downside and a good side, you know. And yeah, like it's tough. Like decisions are always tough, you know, like win or lose by decision. It's always tough because there is also that feeling of like, oh, I could have gone a little more right here.
Do you really feel like that's a loss though? I mean, like, because here's the thing, like when you play pro football, you know, obviously there has to be a winner and loser, right? But like, there's a lot of games that we lost. that I played some of my best football in.
For sure.
And like,
for
even sure. though the scoreboard didn't reflect, I'm just one person. And all of a sudden, jiu-jitsu, it's like you against this person. It's
for
like,
sure.
You know, like there's, it's not a team effort.
For sure.
And you go out there and, you know, what if you dominate the guy and you're in a great position and he just, you know, like case in point, like, you know, when Victor went against Marigali in that Grand Prix and, you know, Marigali goes at sweep and Victor kind of rolls out of it and he ends up on top and like not even a point gives him an advantage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then like, you know, Victor couldn't necessarily score. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not as if that guy, you know, fucking beat his ass for 7 or 8 minutes. I mean, for one sure. little technical thing, he shouldn't have rolled out. He would have been fine.
For sure.
All of a sudden gives you an, you know, disadvantage. So I have a hard time like feeling like, I lost this,
I lost.
You know, whereas,
you know? I think the feeling, at least for me, it's like, oh, I want to run it back as soon as possible. You know, like it kind of feels like a loss, but it's the loss that you are kind of like, oh, let's run it back right yeah. now. Like I'm going to beat you right now. You know what I mean?
One of the worst, and this is no shade at Lovato because he's probably the best martial artist to ever come out of the United States. I mean, he's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. When we were at the UFC deal where he went against Craig Jones mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Craig is literally doing shots of fireball in the back and walks in holding Damon's hand mm-hmm, and they get out there and literally like goes to pull guard mm-hmm. and it was so poorly done. Mm-hmm. He like just happened to fall on Lovato's foot, grabs his ankle and like somehow Hail Mary spins and gets an ankle lock on like Lovato in 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. And like the hilarious part is Shanji even said to him beforehand, he's like, dude, keep your feet away from this dude. And Lovato was like, no, I'm going to wrestle him. I want to beat this dude up. And mm-hmm. and like the dude even said, he's like, I have no chance here. I just got to try to heel hook him.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
he kind of got into it. But I mean, like that was something where I, even after I was like, Lovato, like we went to go eat, he was like sitting with his girl like 30 feet away from us. And I was like, oh man, he's hot. I mean,
yeah, and,
like that, I mean, that was one where, you know, he never even got a chance to get in there and do his jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that's one of the worst feelings. Yeah. Like
you train for it and you don't get a chance to actually go and do the fight.
And that's the thing. Like, a lot of fights, it can be like that, you know, the fight itself. Sometimes you train MMA, you train for like, man, a lot of months and you go there, the first punch is done, you yeah. know? And man, that's one of the worst feelings.
I mean,
you know?
It happened to Victor where that dude, did, you know, had one
exactly.
move.
Exactly.
And, you know, Victor came out too dry. And if he had been, yeah. if he had been super sweaty and done enough warm up, that guy would, there's no way that guy gets that heel hook.
Exactly.
I mean, that guy was severely outmatched and just mm-hmm. dives and just gets Victor's foot and like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like nobody more shocked than us.
Exactly. Man, it sucks. Like, and I remember this fight with Victor, this fight at CGI, I was going to do the weightings. I was losing weight because HCC and CGI wasn't the same day. Mm-hmm. And then I remember that I was watching through my phone, you know? And man, whenever it happened, I felt so like, yeah. was like my lost, you know, I lost you, you know yeah. what I mean? And that's how I also made myself be more aware of my fights too, you know, because I was like, man, I need to be aware. Like, because that's deep inside, you always gonna go to the fight confident, but you don't want to be overconfident where something happened and it's done. You know, you need to be aware. And I feel that that's what I was feeling for the ATC. I was feeling really good. And then that happened to Victor. And I was like, oh, I need to be aware of that, you know, because for me, Victor was going to win the whole tournament. Yeah. You know, he was doing really good.
Well, and he was the favorite. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, he's, you know, to me, I think people can say what they want. But I mean, in terms of like a big dude, in terms of like, you know, ultra, whatever you talk mm-hmm, about, mm-hmm, in terms mm-hmm. of heavyweights, I mean, everything. But like, I mean, Victor's the most dominant guy in the world. 100%. I don't give a shit.
Like,
I'm sad that Gordon Ryan ended up retiring. Mm-hmm, I would have mm-hmm. loved to have seen him go against this version of Victor Hugo.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I think a lot of change for sure since the last time that they fought. It's been what?
Well, it was 2022.
4 years.
Yeah. I mean, Victor couldn't even stand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was after, you know, after that ADCC in 22 is when he came to start training.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember he was like, I had to sit on my butt because I couldn't stand. My back was so bad. Mm-hmm, I was in mm-hmm. such pain. And, you know, Gordon obviously beat him on points, but didn't submit him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to have seen like a big, strong, aggressive, healthy Victor Hugo. And
Gordon.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, Gordon retired. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's got stomach issues. He hasn't been able to get healthy. I mean, so he's got to retire.
For sure.
I would have liked
for
to have sure. seen that one, though.
100%. 100%. But you still have a lot of good fights out there. You know, I feel that. Like Victor in the heavyweight, if we're talking about heavyweight, like Victor, then Nicky Rod, then now Lou Grieve, Felipe Pena, Nicolas Maragallis coming back, you know? So, and that's the thing, like, man, jiu-jitsu need to have those guys, you know, need to have everyone. Each division needs to have at least six guys, because what we're seeing right now in jiu-jitsu is a lot of organizations are starting to ask for exclusivity, mm-hmm. you know? So you need to be exclusivity. But the thing is, like, man, if all the guys sign this, oh, I'm going to be exclusive with this organization, and the other guys are like, oh, I'm going to be exclusive to this one, the fight's never going to happen, you know? So it's like, oh, everyone is a champion, but, like, no one really is. Does that make sense? Because we didn't see the best fights happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was a place where we can just like, oh, okay, let's have this tournament. Everyone, like, that's our main goal for the year, you
well,
know?
I mean, that's what ADCC exactly. has been. I did see that the UFC signing guys and then trying to get them to sign exclusive deals, which is typical of the UFC, but I think is terrible for jiu-jitsu.
Exactly, like... Let's see how it's going to go, you know, like, let's see if UFC can grow as big as it is on the MMA side to see. But I think that's going to take time, you know, and that's the thing.
I don't know if you watched the press conference with Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey. You know, they're fighting. They just had a big press conference. I think it was yesterday, the day before. So they're fighting on a card on Netflix. Mm-hmm. That's being promoted
MMA
by
or boxing.
MMA.
MMA.
Promoted by Jake Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, after Jake Paul's deal with Netflix, they're going to go out and they're going to put an undercard or a card together. And they brought those two. Sean Strickland was pretty funny about it. He's like, yeah, just love what America wants to see, a bunch of middle-aged women beating the shit out of each other. He's such a dick. But, you know, they're putting on this big fight. And during the press conference, Ronda Rousey was torching the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you know, they go, you know, he sells for $7.5 billion and, you know, Dana White's no longer making decisions. They don't pay the fucking fighters. I mean, just was like after him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she has a lot of bitterness because, you know, she was the face of the UFC for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Holly Holm goes out there and sleeps her. And dude, they could not have like distanced themselves and shit on her fast enough. And she was their champion.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of bitterness, but like the problem is when you kind of get into this like monopoly deal where, you know, the only game in town is the UFC,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was Pride and some other organizations, but like the pinnacle of UFC, you have to go by their rules and you have to do what they want in this deal. And I think what, you know, them coming into jiu-jitsu and like trying to do that, you know, I mean, it takes away from, you know, like especially the gi stuff. Because it's not as if they're going to have a gi division.
Yeah.
And regardless of, you know, how much, you know, this American jiu-jitsu shits on the gi, I think you have to be able to do both.
For sure.
You know, I mean, but for the same right, if you can only do jiu-jitsu in a gi, because, you know, the only thing you can do is make grips and hold people in place. Like, I think that just makes you half of a grappler.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to do both. And I know you do both. And, mm-hmm. you know, all the guys at Six Blades do both and mm-hmm. everybody puts the mm-hmm. gi on and there's no aversion to it. However you want to do it. You want to fight in, you know, pajamas or you want to fight in, you know, rash guards.
For sure.
And so I think like, but you're, I think it was Jean-Jacques Machado made a good point where he's like, you know, if your jiu-jitsu only works in one place, like your mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu has holes. You have to be able to 100%. Do it. And, you know, and he's missing a part of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
I always appreciated the fact mm-hmm. that he's like, you know, my jiu-jitsu works in both gi and non-gi because I never had fingers.
Yeah. Like, that's a big, big thing right now. You know, I try to do both. I try to be active on both, you know. This year I pretend to fight both in the high level, you know. But going back to the UFC, that's the thing. Like, what in the fighters are starting to understanding right now, you know. It doesn't matter how big a star you are in the UFC. UFC is the star. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, UFC is supposed to be the star. It's a show, you know? It's not more like, oh, it's a, we're going to fight right here. It's like they want to put a show to everybody, you know? And I see a lot of people saying, like, there is no like, oh, I deserve to fight for the title. You know, I deserve the title shot. It's more like, oh, who can sell the fight against the champion better, you know? And people started understanding that right now. Like the fighters, I was watching a lot of podcasts with a lot of fighters, and they were talking about that. Like, oh, like, it's not, people were asking, like, oh, do you think you deserve a title shot? And he was like, no, it's not like, oh, I deserve a title shot. Like, now I need to work towards my title shot, you know? I need to win my matches, but I also need to make sure that I'm selling and creating a story that it's going to get the people engaged to see me fighting against the champ, you know? If I just win my fights and people don't know this beefing against the champ, I'm not going to get my fight because someone else is beefing with him and people prefer to watch the fight.
Well,
there.
That's the fight game. I mean, that came from boxing. It's not necessarily who the best fighters are. It's who can put the most butts in the seats.
Exactly.
You know, who sells the most pay-per-views. I do think it's interesting that they are talking about like signing a deal, which I think is kind of interesting with this Ronda Rousey deal, because I think they were trying to sign either to Amazon or Netflix or one of the streaming services to put the UFC on there and to sign a huge syndication deal. So I wonder if this Jake Paul, Ronda Rousey, you know, Gina Carano thing is a way to kind of like force, hey, like, look at what we're going to do without you. Better get on. Mm-hmm, so I'm wondering, like, what's happening behind the scenes?
They got a good deal with Paramount, right? Like, that was big.
Well, I think it was $7.5 billion. But, Paramount, like, it's not as big as Netflix.
Netflix.
100%. Yeah. That Jake Paul fight where it was against Anthony Joshua. Those guys made a ton of money. Way more than any other boxing. I mean, who would have thought?
Watch their fight, to be honest? Like,
well, yeah, because everybody has Netflix, and like, you know, all of a sudden, you can pay, whatever it is, $150 or whatever it was to, watch the pay-per-view, or you just click on and you watch this Netflix.
Exactly. Like, that's what UFC was doing before, right? You had to buy the pay-per-view and it was like $80, you know? And man,
they were having them every weekend and you're like, dude, I
cannot.
I'm not dropping $300 on streaming to watch a UFC fight, especially when some of the title fights, because I did buy fights and all of a sudden you're watching the undercard, everything looks good. You get to the title fight and the dude gets knocked out in the first few seconds. Yeah. And you're like, shit.
Yeah.
Thank God so I just stopped buying it just for the fact that like
I'm pretty happy with the Paramount stuff because right now I pay like $8 a month and I can watch all the fights, you know? So it's kind of like, oh, that's perfect.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
I hope UFC BJJ grows, you know. Let's see what's the idea there. I saw some people saying that the fighters that sign with the UFC BJJ would not be able to fight the ATC in 2028, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I saw that too.
But man, let's see, you know, let's see. I don't know how many cards they want to put a year. Let's see if it's worth it, you know, because
I like the fight pass. I got the opportunity to go out with you and Victor. Yeah, like many times on the fight pass deal. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good venue. I didn't like the elevated mat just for the fact that, you know, the Big Dan tried to like throw Victor off the mat, which just seems stupid.
That's the thing, man. It's funny for us to think about that because We're talking like it was yesterday, but man, I think that was like 3 years ago, almost 2 years ago, right? Because that was the elevator mats, and then they changed to the mats on the ground. That was how I fought with the mats on the ground. And then they changed right now to the bowl, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, you, the one when I walked you out when you went against Ronaldo Jr.,
Ronaldo,
that was a flat one.
That was a flat one.
But yeah, when I went out with Victor that first time.
That was.
It was elevated.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like they are doing their own rule set right now. You know, they make look more like MMA now with the three rounds of 5 minutes. So let's see. I like the rule set. I like the idea of the bowl. I've been watching the fights. They actually have a fight today, you know, a card today. Nicky Rod is fighting El Monstro, Elder Cruz. That is the guy that I fought at the second round at HCC. That I beat him. And also the title shot is Mason and Pedro. Mm. And I fought Mason before in the gi. Never fought no gi. But yeah, like, I hope this works, you know. I hope they grow. I hope they can pay better.
Where is it out in Vegas?
Vegas.
Yeah,
Vegas.
So it's on tonight?
Yes, it's on tonight.
Oh, shit. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
All right, so your game has always been very recognizable. Your pacing, your pressure, and the way you can, you know, connect your positions together. When did you start feeling like you were developing your own style and not just kind of like just piecing together somebody else's style? Because I know, like, you know, I mean, it's very apparent in jiu-jitsu when you go to a certain school, especially for, you know, Shanji being as world-renowned and as famous as he is with the Diamond Guard and this. There's things that are very, you know, knee shields, like very classic, you know, Habero, Salo, Shanji jiu-jitsu. You know, and you talk about Lovato's, you know, class or timeless, you know, classic jiu-jitsu of, you know, assess, you know, pressure and pass. So like, as you kind of got into this and you talked earlier about, you know, the kind of, you know, hunting for points and being very strategic, but now all of a sudden you get kind of brought into this, which is like a lot of like, you know, pressure passing and smash and pass and this. And like, as you've kind of got into this, like how long did it take for you to start kind of developing, you know, what your style is like, you know, Felipe Costa style?
Man, like, I feel that whenever I moved here, I was always really, let's say, open-minded to learn, you know? So I'm always like watching, I'm always listening. And I remember that the first tournament that I fought in here in the US, I was a brown belt at the time, and I still kind of like had my game, you know? I was like really pay attention to the strategy side of it, try to score first, doing everything. And then whenever I start training more with Shanji and Victor and Lovato, I feel that it was changing little by little, you know? But I remember that got to a point that I got so comfortable with my defense and so comfortable in just like playing. Like, if you see it, Shanji, he has a really slow pace, you know? He's really, like, slow until the time that he goes for it, you know?
Very methodical.
Victor is kind of the same thing. He's really, like, slow. He does his guard. He has, like, his own pace, you know? And I start doing more things like that. I was more like, oh, I'm going to go slow. I'm going to set it up. Being really technical, let's put it like that. Being really technical, you know, with my movements, trying to be as precise as possible. But I remember that, like, man, the guys that I fight, they are really strong and they start to get used to this pace, you know. And I end up losing a tournament. I don't remember what tournament was it, by like one advantage. And in the end, we had a conversation, you know, because we were like, Felipe, like, with those guys, we need to turn it up, you know, you need to go for it. And then I remember that from there, I was more like thinking about, oh, okay, I need to put the pace, I need to be more heavy on the top, I need to be more aggressive, you know. And I think that starts to change a little bit. But yeah, I think it took me losing a tournament, being really like Victor and Shanji, more like slow pace and make sure that I'm being really methodical. For me to figure out that sometimes, like,
you cannot just do what other people are doing. You need to put your personality there, you know, like, oh, who you really are, you know? And that's when I start finding myself. And then I start mixing the game that I have back then that was aggressive, but really strategic. And the game that Victor, Shanji, Saulo, Lovato does, you know? So I start to mix it up, things together. And I feel that, man, after the Who's Number One fight, the first time that I fought at the Who's Number One, that was what, almost 2 years and a half ago, I remember that something clicked, you know? I was already feeling really good to the match. Everything was good. Like, I was winning a lot of tournaments. But I remember that there, I was feeling, we even had this conversation. I was feeling a little sick in the day. And I remember that I was trying to push and was not going, you know?
It was like Superman forgot his cape.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what we talked about like, you need to save your best for game day.
Game day.
On the match. That if your best roles are in practice, this isn't going to help us get where you go.
For sure.
And I think like that piece was influential because I think you went out there and, you know, like.
Yeah. That's the thing. That day I felt something that I was like, oh man, I don't want to feel that again. You know, there's no way I don't want this feeling. I didn't like this feeling, you know. Not because of the game that I was, also because of the game. I think that because I was feeling sick, I was being really conservative and trying to find the little gap, but the gap didn't show up, you know. So then at HCC, that was my next tournament after that. I was like really on top of who I am, what I wanted to do. I was being aggressive. And I would say that ATC was the moment that I kind of like break out and I really discover like, oh, I want to, that's the person that I want to be. That's who I am, you know?
No, it was great. It was an awesome event. It was great to see you out there in that position. And like, I was standing right there when that dude had you in the heel hook and he was cranking and cranking and cranking and you were like, I'm not tapping.
Yeah.
And then the dude realized, he was like, I can't crank anymore. And then and at that point he had to do something else.
Yeah. Now, that's the thing. I don't feel that the ATC was the event that I most show like a technical game, but it was the tournament that I was showing that I wanted more than everyone. You know, like there was not other place that I wanted to be than there fighting, you know, and that's really hard to, because people will say that, but you can kind of like tell by looking, you know, you can kind of like tell, there is people that want more than what you're doing right now, you know, so I feel that tournament, I wanted more than everyone. I feel that my match against Giancarlo was actually me wanting a lot that put me in like wrong situations and he ended up scoring after 15 minutes. Yeah. You know, I feel that if I was a little bit more like, oh, I'm going to hold back a little bit, I couldn't frustrate him a little more to find a space. But I was so like on top of him and tried to do stuff that I ended up giving him some points. But man, it didn't, that was a fight that it felt like a loss, but it felt like, oh, I want to run it back right now. You know, like I'm feeling good. Like I know that I can get the win, you know, but sometimes that doesn't happen. You know, you need to wait. But that tournament, I think, was a good breakthrough moment of like, oh, that's who I am, you know, and that's one thing I feel that we fight, you need to have these moments where you know who you are and you search for that, you know, because fighting is just like your life. If you are a guy that, and jiu-jitsu shows a lot of that. If you are a guy that whenever you see a problem, you run away from the problem, what happens, your jiu-jitsu, every single time that someone puts in a weird position, you're going to always run away then trying to figure out, you know? But if you're a guy that whenever the problems show up, you try to solve it, you try to do something else, whenever the problem happens on jiu-jitsu, you're going to try to solve it, you know? And I feel that that's what is with us. We try to problem solve all the time, you know? We try to, oh, the person put something here, I'm trying to solve it. And it got to a point that
I think Victor ended up losing a match, and we had a conversation after. And Shanji was like, guys, we need to start doing the same game that they are doing, you know, because we are trying to solve problems, but they are running away. So now we need to figure out how to find the person, you know, how to get somewhere. And then, yeah, we start to make sure that the training look more like the tournament, you know, because we were trying to solve problems. People were running away, and we like, yo, there's nothing to do here. You know, he's just backing out. So, yeah, I feel that was a breakthrough moment for sure, HCC. And since the HCC, I've been just competing a lot, you know, and fighting a lot. And I feel that every single time now, I'm just getting better and better and better in applying my game and like finding the gaps and putting myself in the position that I want, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, you've trained with a lot of high-level athletes. You brought up, you know, Lovato and Shanji and Leandro Lowe and Victor. I mean, some of the, you know, top guys in the world you've been fortunate to train with. How much has that style has shaped the environment, like versus like you discovering it through your own experimentation? Like you think about, I'm sure you know, you watch jiu-jitsu and you've seen some of these like different people that you kind of emulate and you look at their game and you take pieces. Like how much of it is like looking at somebody else and like saying, all right, like here's how they solve that problem. I'm going to solve it the same way versus you just like coming up with solutions in, you know, in the moment and kind of figuring this piece out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Man, like that is things that you have a different body type than I do, right? So that is things that you're gonna do it and it's gonna work for you, and that is things that I'm gonna do it and it's gonna work for me, you know? And that's a big thing. I feel that whenever I'm teaching, I always try to think about the solution that may work to everyone, you know? I don't try to show the way that I do. Just if the person comes to me like, oh, but how you do that? And I'm like, oh, like I have long legs, so I prefer to do that, you know? But I try to make sure that I put the technique in a way that everyone can see it and everyone can reproduce it, you know? And that was always like a challenge whenever I'm teaching. That made me understand and learn much more about jiu-jitsu, you know? But I feel that training with those guys, it's also a way that I do a shortcut, you know, because I learn about the technique, I learn the way that they do, and we have similar games, let's put like that. Like I still do a lot of the techniques that Leandro showed me, you know, I do a lot of the techniques that Shanji showed me, I do a lot of the techniques that Lovato, Victor showed me, you know, but through time, I start to change a little bit on each position to make sure that fits my game better, you know? So it's kind of like I can see what they're doing and I'm like, oh, if I move a little bit this way because I have a long, long leg, I may be able to do that better, you know? And then I start to develop in this side. But it's more about being able to see something and be able to criticize is the right word. Am I saying right?
What do you mean?
For example, whenever someone tells you something, you don't take as a whole truth, you know? You always think with yourself and you're like, oh, okay, like I can see the truth on that, but I also can see that if I do this way, it can also go right, you know? What's the name of that? It's not like I'm criticizing something.
Oh, like, well, you're not, that is like you're not discounting somebody else's like problem solving, but you're looking at it from like, all right, here's one way to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Here's another way. So I think what you're talking about is looking for like many different solutions. To the same problem. Like, you know, like one of the, you know, my favorites is, I was watching for, you know, your triangle is pretty vicious. Mm-hmm. I was watching some stuff and I was looking at triangle escapes. Mm-hmm. And one of the funniest ones I saw was as the guy got triangled, he basically stepped over and like flipped the guy on his stomach, almost like a scorpion and like leaned back and like broke the triangle. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching it, I was like, man, like that is something that I could do because I'm big and strong.
If
you got me in a triangle, I would step over the head and try to like, you know, get you in that position.
Try your luck and then.
But I'll try it. But that's not something that like if somebody was smaller
would do it.
Like you would have to be pretty aggressive, use a lot of pressure, and be pretty strong to basically flip a guy over on his stomach
For sure.
And then what you have to do is assume that the guy is going to hold the triangle, you know, like all of a sudden lose the triangle, get into another submission.
Yeah.
So as I was watching it happen, I was like, oh, that's an interesting triangle escape.
Yeah.
But then looking at it and being like, yeah, but if I stepped over like that and the guy was on the bottom and he lets go, he's all of a sudden in my legs.
And it's
going to add a whole bunch of new problems. But yeah, I mean, like, so if you go in and somebody teaches that escape, and you're not bigger and stronger than the other dude, this escape doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing which I appreciate about, you know, Shanji's game is like the game works, or his style works for big people and little people, which, you know, there's styles of jiu-jitsu. I think like big guys use a, you know, like a big guy style of jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the thing which is fascinating with Shanji's style is it seems to be, you know, because I've rolled with, you know, Fredson and who's our guy in Rio, little
Kuru, guy. Kuru.
Yeah.
Kuru, Kuru.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kuru guard. Yeah. What's his name?
God, man.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm.
Man, it ran from my mind now, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like when I rolled
Kuru
with
Kuru
him,
Lane.
Yeah,
Kuru,
yeah, yeah, Kuru, yeah. Kuru, yeah. Kuru. So when I rolled with him, I just realized like I was gonna just smother him. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to let him do any of his bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he literally like fucking got in his fucking like, and I like, it was like trying to like crack a impossible nut.
Yeah.
And we got done and he's like, oh, that was good. And I was like, I couldn't fucking do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, sometimes you got to weather the storm, but like there's a, it's fascinating to see different people when they come to jiu-jitsu kind of gravitate and learn different things and this. And it's really fascinating how, like, you know, I mean, it just takes a while to do it, but I mean, you get to the point that you're at where now, you know, you've rolled and trained and, you know, competed at such a high level that, you know, now all of a sudden, like, you know, what is your game? Like, is your style? Like, what's the stamp you put on?
For sure. I feel that, but that's the thing. What I was saying too is like, for sure, whenever you are a white belt, you get somewhere. Let's say I went to high school. Let's talk about high school here really fast. If one professor comes up to you and teach you something, you take that as the whole truth, right? Like, yo, okay, that's the truth here. I'm gonna start acting like that. Other professor comes up to you and starts telling you that right now. And then you forgot what this professor said, and you're like, no, this professor is the right one. I need to do what he's doing, you know? So what I start to think, it's like, man, jiu-jitsu, that is never like a whole truth, you know? Jiu-jitsu, there is a lot of ways that you can figure out the same puzzle, you know? So actually, what I try to think is like, what from this professor can I use it? And I'm going to be able to be successful. And what from this professor can I use it and be able to be successful? And not like, oh no, this guy taught me something different. Now this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is the guy that I'm going to follow, you know? And I never fall like that. I'm always like, oh, okay, what can I use from each one of my professors that I can put on my game? But also I heard someone saying, I think it was on like a little video on YouTube or something like that, that for example, what you teach me, it's not just your knowledge. It's knowledge from who taught you, from who taught them, and from lineage. Who taught, you know? So like, for example, if you say that that's not real for one person, you're not just telling that that's not real for him, that doesn't work for him. You're saying that who taught him that, it's bullshit, who taught him, the other guy. So you're pretty much saying that the whole thing was a lie, you know? And I don't believe that. I feel that, man, every single person, they know something that they can give me that information. So that's why I'm always learning, I'm always listening. I always have this mentality that I want to learn from everyone, because I believe that every single person, it's gonna have a way to solve something that I'm gonna be able to use it, you know? It's funny because even seeing white belts is one of the trainings that I like to watch, because they go at it, they do a lot of things that makes no sense, but sometimes they do one thing that should not make sense that you're kind of like, man, that was smart for him to do that, you know? And he doesn't even know what he did, you know?
Sure.
But I'm like, man,
that's thinking out of the box. You know, he doesn't know what to do. So that's why he did something that for me is fascinating, because I was just thinking inside of the box. Mm. I was thinking like, oh, he should go left here. He went right and up and back, and he did a lot of things that I'm like, oh, he, that's something right there. I could use it there more, you know?
Well, so what that's about, how. You're talking about like the sports specific aspect, like the technique, like the, the understanding. There's certain intangibles that you have to have, you know, and you see it all the time, like conditioning.
For sure.
And being strong and being flexible and being strong in the, in these different kind of like flexed positions, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of people that are very passively flexible, but to be strong in active ranges of motion and being flexible, like when it counts in different positions, that piece of the game, you know, is something that, at least from my understanding, it didn't really exist up until a few years ago. Like, you know, like talking to Shanji about what they did for their training, they just did more jujitsu. And then like what they do for their conditioning, I don't know. They just, you know, they went out and ran in the morning, but like actually putting kind of a strength conditioning program together where now you're lifting weights and you're, you know, we're charting, like we just did the superhuman protocol. I mean, adding these elements to it. So, you know, you see a guy like Winston, who's, you know, very talented judoka and jujitsu guy, but yet really lacks conditioning. And he's not been able to develop that on the mats. You know, he's real strong. He trains, and I've seen him in there training a bunch, but it's pretty interesting that like something hasn't happened on the mats. Like he needs to develop and foster that somewhere else to make him better on the mat. For sure. Like, why is it that certain people can just do jujitsu? You know, I mean, cause like, you know, talking to Shanji, you know, about, you know, Hodger Gracie and, you know, Salo and these guys, like they did not really understand strength conditioning and like the idea of like conditioning. They just figured more jujitsu is more jujitsu. And like now it's kind of changed. And, you know, as I was talking with Shanji, he's like, you know, I wish we had access to this. I felt like we could have done so much more and been so much more successful if we'd had these pieces. So like those are the, you know, and same in pro football, like there's the technique that you do, but there's certain intangibles that you bring, like flexibility and power and strength that like aren't necessarily developed within the confines of the sport, but happen somewhere else. And then you find a way to use those and port those over.
Man, I feel that that happened in all the sports, you know, and we see that happening in the last 30, 20 years in jiu-jitsu, you know. Like, I would say that back then, they were fighters, you know, and today we are athletes, you know. Like, back then, they could do everything and just do jiu-jitsu, and they would be fine because that's what everyone else was doing, you know. But now, if, man, everyone is having good conditioning, is doing a good strengthly trained protocol, is doing all of that, if you are someone that are not doing that, you're probably going to get behind at some point. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how talented you are. Sometimes physicality, it's going to play a big role. You know, in some of the mats, man, you are really talented, but you got someone that is really strong, they're going to be able to hold you down. You know, like they're going to be able, you're going to get tired fast. You're going to find some problems, you know. And we see that happening like back then in soccer. We see that all the soccer players, like even in Brazil, soccer is a big deal in Brazil. But all the soccer players back then, they were partying the night before the game. You know, they would go party. They would do everything. They would go to the game. They would play 90 minutes, you know, and do just perfect, you know. And they were really talented back then. But today, the sport changed a lot. Everyone's faster. Everyone jumps higher. Everyone does things that they were not doing back then, you know. Like, we never going to know if they play how they played there. They played today. If they would have the same success that they had before, or if they would just get behind, you know. I would say that they would get behind. That's what I try to believe, because that also helps me to keep pushing myself, you know. If I get myself thinking like, oh, no, but I'm talented, I'm going to get behind for sure, you know. Like, and I never thought that I was talented. Like, growing up, I always saw, like, my professor, he was training a lot back then. He was doing a lot of things. Like, he was already doing his strength conditioning. He knew a good coach of Olympic weightlifting.
So he was already doing that back then, you know, and we're talking about back in 2012, 2011, you know. So my professor, I think that he played a big role on have this mentality of like, oh, you need to work hard. It doesn't matter. Like if it's easy for you to do something, you need to keep working hard, because if not, that easy thing, it's going to turn hard, you know. And going back, I think that what happened in the beginning, whenever we moved here, me and Victor, we were just training because we didn't have a physical, well, like a strengthening coach, you know, a guy that would push us. So we would go to the gym and just do whatever comes up to our heads, you know. We would be like, oh, let's do biceps. Yeah. Let's do biceps. Let's do.
Which is always good.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Biceps and leg extensions.
Exactly. So. Yeah, we were doing that, but then got to a time that we were like, no, we need to be more professional about it. And then, man, the right people showed up at the right moment, you know, and then was whenever Shange met you, and then you were like, oh, bring the boys to train here. Yeah. And then we all start connecting together, you know.
At the black belt level, everyone is super technical, right? When you're preparing for high level matches, how much of the game is strategy and problem solving versus just executing what you already do really well?
Oof, man. I would say that whenever I'm training for a match, I always look what the guy's doing, and I do a lot of partial in what he's good at it, you know? So I can try to find different ways to solve that problem, you know? Because sometimes that's the thing. And we talked about that before, but I feel that the training room, you can get really close of what the person does, but sometimes it's not going to be 100% accurate, you know?
Like when Arash shaved his body to be Nicky Rod. And then covered himself in lotion.
Exactly, exactly. He got close. He kind of like looked at Nicky
Rod. And then Arash had like a 5 o'clock shadow on his whole body. He like rushed up against me and it felt like weird chicken skin. And I was like, oh, this is so gross.
Man, but no, exactly. Like he got close, but he was not this...
Yeah, no, I rolled with Nicky Rod. He was like, he was like trying to catch. It's like I was wearing like grease gloves trying to catch a fish.
Exactly.
Oh
like,
my God, man,
it's different, you know. Like, but then I try to put myself in the same situations just to make sure that I know what is happening. I know how to deal with that. But I also try to work a lot on my own game, you know. I know, like, oh, if I get to the half guard, I'm going to get to the mountain, I'm going to submit this guy. If I get to this place, I'm going to be able to get to his back, you know. So I always try to put in my mind that if I do what I'm good at it, but still be aware of he's good at it,
yeah,
I'm going to be able to solve the problem. So I feel that it's like, I would say that it's like, 70-30, you know, 70% of my game and 30% knowing what the guy is going to do, you know. Mm-hmm. For sure, you go to a match and maybe the guy got to all his good position and now the match is like 80% on his favor, but you're still trying to figure out, you know. So that can change. But my training, I would say that it goes like that.
Okay. A lot of young athletes want to be professional grapplers, right? This is the path that they dream of. What do you think separates the people who actually make it from the ones who are just talented and don't make it?
I feel that, man, everything that we talk about, like people today, they think that being an athlete is just being an athlete. You know, it's just train and like train, lift weights, and that's it, you know. But what it changed a lot in my mentality, I see a lot myself as a business, you know. I see that I need to invest in myself. I need to grow my brand. I need to, like, what we were talking about, the UFC, you know. Today, it doesn't matter if you are just good on the mats, if you don't have a persona on the social media, if you don't talk, if you don't know how to have a good conversation, you're not going to get anywhere, you know. Because there is someone else that is doing like 10% worse than you on the matches, but he knows how to articulate. He knows how to sell a match. He knows how to talk. So I feel that today, if you just think like, oh, I need to win matches, you're going to for sure get behind.
But you need to see yourself as a business. You know, you need to see that that's your brand. You need to make sure that you study. You need to make sure that you develop leadership skills. You need to make sure that jiu-jitsu is not a sport that you're gonna like close out a contract of $1 million if you win a world championship. Jiu-jitsu is a sport that you win a world championship on Sunday. On Monday, you're back doing the same thing that you were doing before, you know? So you need to know that, and you need to make sure that you are ready for that. So you cannot put yourself just thinking for like, oh, I want to win the world championship. What you need to think is like, oh, okay, that's one thing that I want to do. It's win a world championship. But how can I enjoy the most the process by learning different skills, by growing my brand, by creating connections, by doing everything else that runs behind just of being an athlete, you know? So I think that people need to understand that better, because the idea of like just training and beating everybody on the mats, it's not enough anymore. You know, it was at some point, but today it's not anymore, unfortunately, because that's the thing. Like, I don't really like to, I'm not like a social media person. I try to be, you know.
Yeah, no. Well, but I think we all try to be.
Yes.
But it feels, I had a good conversation with Matt Vincent about it. It feels like you realize that you have to provide people access, you know, because it's part of your brand or whatever. But like, how do you necessarily explain to people like the access within the moment? You know, like think about like the relationship that you have with like with Victor and Chanji and this, and you give people these kind of small snapshots, and it always feels disingenuous because like the people don't really understand. They don't really understand what it goes in. You just kind of give me these little snapshots, like you know, you'll post something from the weight room with us lifting weights, and you know, but like what they just see like this one moment in time, and it's almost disingenuous for like the volume of work that's been done. So it's just, I don't know. There's an interesting disconnect of like being able to give people enough access to build your brand, but not so much access that it just, I don't know, it cheapens it or kind of becomes like an arduous process.
Yeah.
So you have who's number 132 coming up?
Yes.
Yeah. So you have a fight there. Australian guy who's a new wave guy, I think.
Yeah, he used to train at Kingsway. I think he's still training there. Okay.
So is it called Kingsway? It's not called New Wave anymore?
No, it's Kingsway. No.
Okay, so they changed their name? Okay.
Yeah.
So you got that guy, but you know, the big prize this year and the big kind of the eye on everything is ADCC 2026, which is going to happen in Poland. Who are you hoping to see there? Is there anybody that like, you know, you got, because you meddled 2 years or last year, you get an invite this year, so you don't have to go through the trials. But is there anybody that you're kind of looking for in your weight class? I mean, you know, you talked about Giancarlo being able to run it back. I mean, is there anybody who's kind of in that weight class, in that division, that you're looking forward to seeing there?
I would say that Giancarlo is the biggest name. You know, he won the last two times. And he just had a surgery, you know. I don't know if he's going to recover in time to get a good training camp and to fight at HCC. I hope so, because I want to run it back, and there is not a better place to run it back than HCC, you know. Same rule set, let's go at it. There is a lot of new names right now coming up, you know. A name that is coming up right now, but I don't care if I fight him or not. It's Ferris, you know. Like,
oh,
I already fought him.
Well, you beat him.
Yes, I beat him.
And like, and the guy that beat him at Pan's World?
At Worlds.
Yeah, or at Victor. Worlds. Victor just smashed within like 10 seconds. That guy thought he was going to get a single leg, and he didn't know how sneaky Victor was to take his back.
Exactly. But he's my division. I think he's going to get invited in the ATC.
He also went against Shanji. Didn't submit Shanji, ends up winning and talking shit. And I'm like, you basically couldn't submit a 45-year-old man.
Man, like, that's the thing. He did talk a lot of shit, you know, like, for sure. Like, I would love to fight him again, but end of the day, like,
I'm scared for that dude because Victor is
going after him, you know. Yeah, so,
and Victor is a big, strong gorilla. Who twists people's heads like you're trying to, you know, twist a bottle top. Oh my God. I'm like, yeah. I for those of you guys that don't know, one of the last times I rolled with Victor, I had him in a pretty good position and he just stood up with me, on his hip and literally lifted me off the ground. And I was like, whoa, don't hurt me. I seriously thought he was going to drop me on my neck and there was nothing I can do. So to be like 265, 270 pounds and have a dude stand up with you that easily, and put you in, and then like,
scary.
Yeah, I was like, Victor is a big, strong dude. And once he gets you into position, like I was laughing when he choked that dude across his face because that's, I mean, we call that the Victor Hugo.
Yeah, yeah. Like Victor, they are talking a lot in the internet. Victor probably gonna fight him, you know. Like I beat him before, so if I face him at HCC, that he's probably gonna be there. It's gonna be good, you know.
Well, like, if he goes against Victor, he could be missing an arm. I realize the guy's taking a little bit of fight, you know, talking shit, but like at some point, you're gonna, like, it's gonna be bad.
You're gonna face the reality. You know?
Yeah, like, I've never seen an angry Victor Hugo. Victor's such a good natured, and like he goes out in this, and like he's always kind of got a little bit of playfulness in him. I don't think I've ever legitimately seen him with his ears pulled back and like, I'm gonna fucking murder this guy. And
maybe it's now.
Well, I mean, you know, he made the mistake of talking shit on Shanji, and like, you know, I mean, you know, Shanji's the patriarch in this thing, and there's a lot of pride and you know, and I think it's funny that Shanji's probably a little upset that now he has to have people go defend his honor, and he's like, no, I can still defend my honor. So I'm excited for that one, and I'm also a little nervous for that dude, but that'd be a good matchup. But no, I'm super excited to see you. I'm gonna be in ADCC Poland with you. I'm excited to go and you know, go down this journey and, you know, get you ready for this training camp. So
yes, sir.
Let's cut it there and let's go lift some weights.
Let's do it.
So thanks for having Felipe Costa on Power Athlete Radio, and we'll see you later.
See you later.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales you've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's klfi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.